had to travel for quite some time. I am, on the way to Las Vegas, New Mexico, not Las Vegas, Nevada. Taking one of my favorite back roads, probably the most scenic. One of the most scenic roads. There's a back road to Clayton that I like too. Very scenic, very nice. At least as scenic as it gets here, for being kind of brown and, you know, it ends up being interesting rock formation. You know, which has its appeal. I can't say, I can't say it doesn't. Oh. My water and stuff. Take care of this now. I gotta check my email to see what emails are happening here. While we're recording, probably vaguely bad. But what do you do? Oh, okay, that's fine. Acting up again. Whatever. QuickBooks installation. Okay, I think that's all she wrote. So, there's the answer. Well, that thing just died, but ASR's still running, excellent. Okay, so you should still be recording. Everything's okay. I'm about ready to drop off everything. You know, everything's about ready to just kind of disappear. Anyway, so talk a bit the story I started working on. We got some more stuff out of it. This kind of it's always interesting how people inflate value. Like, I was just looking a little while ago, there was a piece of property that was being sold. It was like 60 acres, and they wanted $1 million for it, around here. And how absolutely stunning that was. I'm sure that person calculated up all of the effort, all the life, and all the improvements that they had done to reach a figure around $1 million, and just said, well, that's what I'm willing to sell for. And I think the first question to ask is, if it's worth so much, if that land and it's going to be the cattle business around here, and the cattle business that's wrapped around that acreage is really worth $1 million, why are you leaving? And I'll tell you what the ultimate answer is. It's usually, well, I can't afford, it just can't support my family. And you're going, okay, so a family of how many? Typically it's going to be three or four people. A family of three or four people who can't support themselves off of this land and what can be pulled off of it, yet you say it's worth $1 million, as if somebody with $1 million will come in here, will say, oh, what a wonderful opportunity or deal, or man, this is fantastic, and buy, if it was 600 acres, it would still be way too much. You know, even though people say, oh, no, that could easily cost $1 million. If you go, if it's, you know, prime vacation land in a ski area, you might be able to get that much money for 600 acres. If that guy's going to immediately split up into 5-acre plots and sell off each one for, you know, $50,000 or $60,000, that would, you know, that's doable. That's called an investment. He said, but you know what? He said, if you're operating 60 or 600 acres, I'm sorry, 600, if I seem to recall, if you guys can't make a go of it, the experienced ranchers, why should anybody else want to buy it at that price? And everybody knows, especially in the United States, that you're never going to get what you're asking. In fact, I think it's gotten so weird that I think you could easily ask for a tenth of what people are usually wanting for something, and that's considered a serious offer. You know, as well, okay, they want to pay $100,000 for 600 acres. We'll take your offer. We're not going to accept it yet because we're really kind of holding out for somebody to come do it. And that's what usually happens around here, you know. Hang on to the land. It may be for sale for 20 years. In fact, easily ends up being for sale for 20 years or so. And then finally, all of a sudden, it changes owners. Everybody goes, well, nobody ever heard anybody ever making a real offer on it, you know. They usually wait until, you know, it comes up. It's usually kind of a buddy deal, your neighbor, something like that. And it's usually for about a tenth what you would advertise for. You know, it's kind of like eBay. When you go to eBay, especially when it comes to vintage computer stuff, oh, they'll jack up the price. You know, something that originally cost $20 and somebody's offering it for $200, and I swear, you know, I don't think they have any intention of it actually selling. They actually do that, and then after the auction's over, they will entertain kind of an outside auction transaction after the fact, and say, sure, you know, if you're willing to pay $30 for this old thing that's hard to get, and they justify it by saying this is really esoteric piece, hard to get, and we know that somebody will be wanting to desperately get this. It'll be like a 3.5-inch floppy drive, and I mean nothing weird about it at all. Standard stock crap. You know, 10 years ago when floppies were common, you know, you could get one for $5. You know, and it really ends up being one of those kinds of things. And you go, wow. And I really find it interesting, you know, those kind of people. And I don't ever deal with those people. I don't ever say, hey, can I get one of those? I'll always wait until I find something that I need that is worth a lot. And I'm sure, you know, if I I threw out tons of stuff. I actually threw out I am SIA wasn't all there. And it was close. And those things usually go for at least $1,000 over the shipping. And you know, because they're so rare and people will pay that much for them. I don't know why they pay that much for them. Thank you. And even if it's broken and in pieces and there's no, you know, and it's been caked in mud for 20 years, they'll still pay a pretty penny for it, just on the off chance that it'll have what's needed. And I don't know if that's true because those were the original computers and many large companies still need them. You know, they haven't been able to quite virtualize these things yet, which is silly because almost all these things are virtualized. You can basically set up, you know, that antique of a computer and have it running virtually on modern hardware. It's nice, amazing, you know. Somebody will hold on to a crappy old, you know, 1950s truck that's all rusted and doesn't have any value whatsoever. This guy that I was seeing, he finally just, I don't know if he died or whatever. Finally, somebody's kind of getting rid of and cleaning up some of his property. And he had one of those things. He put it under you know, he had kind of a carport built over it, you know, to try to protect his investment in this rusty old heap. Not even rusty. I mean, you couldn't tell what paint job would have been on it earlier because it was just rusted to heck. And it's like, I don't understand what value that thing has. But apparently it has value to him. And that's fine. But he always had a sign up on it saying it was for sale. So I guess he wasn't that attached to it. It's always amazing to me. I buy vintage stuff because it's cool and cheap. You know, like I just bought an Amstrad NC100 notebook. And, I don't know what I'm ever going to do with the thing. But it was probably the last and most functional and most usable E80 based computer. The fact that it was a notebook is cool. Fact that he uses that everything on it is absolutely standard and doesn't you know, it doesn't require something weird from from the past you can't get anymore. Like, I have a Tandy 102, and as soon as I get the damn strand and get it up working the way I want to, I'm going to get rid of the Tandy 102, model 102, which was, in its own right, kind of a cool computer. You know, this thing does circles around that Tandy on every level. Has standard ports. Tandy has these proprietary ports. Buying the cables for is absolutely meaning as terrible as impossible. You can actually print stuff from the Amstrad to later jet computers that I actually own. mill, which in a printer that'll work with it. No printer that I know of can work with that Tandy 102. It was made to work with Tandy printers from bygone age that aren't compatible with anything. Radio Shack was in the beginning, and one of its biggest problems was it was terrible. It was proprietary. It just, you know, it wasn't compatible with anything, on any level. And, you know, yeah, I got one of those. I got it pretty cheap, and it had some problems. It had some keyboard issues, which I fixed. And so, you know, that goes into the description, you know, of saying you're going to get this. And I still have my stuff with you. I often take a little while off on it, but that's okay. I get these things as little projects. And I build them and I make them work, and then once I get them working, it's almost like, well, I don't really care about them. So anyway, well, before we start getting rid of the stuff, the really great thing about the Amstrad NC100 is that it is a British box. You know, it has a British keyboard. And in having a British keyboard, it's kind of a preparation for me to get good at typing on British keyboards, because I'm going to move, you know, my plan is to move to Britain someday. And, you know, the sooner the better for me, personally. Anyway, so... I don't need to get a ticket out here. I know nobody does 55 here, but I'm gonna. Because I am not in a rush for any level. Oh boy. Anyway, gonna check on those. And do a whole lot of junk. Okay, I'm going to pause this for a minute, and kind of see how things are going. Oh, it's doing sync. That's interesting. Oh, look at that. That is too cool. Okay, I'm gonna pause this for a minute so I can make focus. Okay, hey, look, it's back to recording. That's too cool. This little booger. I am constantly impressed by these little guys and how they do and how they go. Oh, it's working beautifully. Anyway, so, that's all for now. I'm feeling good. Anyway, so yeah, this is kind of my British keyboard to help me kind of get ready for British things. The problem is, probably isn't my best setup. I have an Alpha Smart 3000 keyboard, which is excellent because you can actually use it as a USB keyboard. But you can also use it as you can also just type on it and then transfer it into any program later, you know. And that's probably the coolest function. And the fact that it lasts for like a billion years on no battery power whatsoever. And so that's the Alpha Smart 3000 I have. It's probably the best money I think I've ever spent. I think I spent like $20 on it. And it's excellent because I can take it anywhere. That USB cable and go up to any computer and be able to dump everything to it, no matter what the circumstance is. It doesn't have to be compatible or anything crazy like that. You just have to test for you. Slick little system. It's a crappy keyboard. I would really love to be able to replace the actual keyboard with a better one. You know, I mean, the actual physical mechanism, it's actually very cheap and crappy, and it would be better by far to be able to put like a IBM Clicky keyboard. Oh man, would that be the absolute fantastic? That would be the best setup of all. I can imagine that it's probably quite doable it's a mechanical thing. You know, it isn't difficult at all to replace something that's basically mechanical. Anyway. Let's see here. Let's talk about story a little bit. Because it's really interesting. I was starting to talk about trying to mix antique stuff together to make this work is something that would be immediately dismissed by modern science because something that is like, oh, we walked away from that centuries ago. We don't do anything like that anymore. And you go, oh, maybe you should not. Because honestly, you know, that stuff actually works. And it was done by kind of a method that we don't really employ anymore, which is just the. I don't know, is it the empirical method? I'm not sure. You just mix crap together and try stuff. Mostly by intuition. And some pretty interesting things start happening. My current level of science can't explain or doesn't need to try. I was just watching an episode of Stossel. And it was a weird one. About God versus science. Guests on. Like Bill Nye, the science guy. Who I thought was very
creation in the classical. So I don't think he was really advocated for it. Science as the theory. No. This is more of, this is what we've seen, this is what we've discovered, this is what we've observed, this is what we've tested, and here's the information for what you look for. And I thought that the story would be really fun in that it takes a rather Galen view, you know, of the body of medicine. I did a little bit of research, not that. I like the fact that the ability to time travel was tied to a bubble that is somehow processed from a person's yellow bile, which is sometimes equated with blood serum. And tied to the sleeve. So this woman who we encounter, who is having trouble, who's hiding in Shetland. She was practically a victim as a young girl. I don't even call it an experiment. She was a Catholic Church She was an early Christian church trained assassin. Her job was to forcibly be turned into a time traveler to go out and to hunt down, destroy other time travelers. Now, you have to understand that in modern parlance, that, you know, this is patently silly. You know, from a scientific point of view, from modern medicine, you know, all this stuff is based on garbage, as far as they're aware of. But, you know, but you have this weird evidence, and it's not really real evidence. But it's heavily circumstantial and people travel through time, not through space. And frankly, there's, you know, as if you were to confront her about this, she would give you a quizzical look and say, why why would that be necessary? Because I can zip to the future and travel quickly, you know. So it doesn't count. So it has to do with this bubble that's formed around you. It becomes kind of to our present way of speaking, it becomes kind of a virtual spleen. Because the spleen is what is supposed to produce yellow bile. And of course, she's a real crabby sort or anything like that. And it's because, as part of what they did to her, they removed her spleen. And there's things she has to do to make up for the fact that she doesn't have a spleen anymore. It's really quite interesting because what I was talking about in a recording before I did the study was actually borne out a little bit by this ability. The fact that, you know, there's bubbles and the thing that she was supposed to do, it really is an assassination. But it is the bursting of this bubble. And the bursting of this bubble stops you, you know, you know, number one, you can no longer time travel. And number two, the function of your, you know, whatever your body needed your spleen for is also gone. And apparently, you know what happened? Right after World War II, for some reason, a lot of people had their spleen taken out. A lot of soldiers, U.S. soldiers, had their spleens removed. Don't ask me why they did that, but they did. And they did a longitudinal study on these guys that had their spleen taken out. And the strange things that happened. It's almost kind of akin to AIDS. And, you know, for just having kind of a deficient immunity, which would justify just kind of staying away from other people that might be carriers of things. You know, going to a place, you know, there would already be some built-in reasons why you would want to kind of avoid other people as a time traveler, because there are, you know, this bubble equates to some personal space, you know, and people coming into that personal space causes problems. It's almost like a very visceral invasion, you know, it causes problems for the person that goes into the bubble, and it causes problems for the person the bubble is formed around. And it just causes these issues. And I don't know how much you can really control the time travel. I think you can, you know, but there's also just circumstances that just cause this to kind of happen, kind of almost akin to blackout, and all of a sudden you wake up and it's a different time, and you know, the whole difficulty is trying to figure out what time it is or whether it's even really, you know, relevant, and there's no precision in it at all. There's just a sense of going forward or moving back, and there seems to be certain barriers that you really can't cross. Like, for some reason, the whole concept of the Garden of Eden is some kind of barrier that you can't really get past. You know, You can go and visit Adam after he was out of the garden, but you can't go visit Adam in the garden. You know, it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't, you can't go that far. Also, there is a barrier on the far end of the transition. You know, it's almost kind of Earth transition. You know, those people are tied to their estate, basically. And you know, it isn't quite that good cut, but you know, because nobody can get beyond the transition of the terrestrial world into the Telestial. It just doesn't happen. You know, it can't be done. It doesn't matter how much you will to continue to move forward in time. You can't do it past that point. And you can't go past. So you basically only got this, you know, 8,000 year period. So it's to kind of play around. So this, and it's called the Magisterium, which is an actual early Christian governing body. With all of the weird attitudes that those guys have, this happens. But I think as stories progress along, start sitting in these stories, and I as the author kind of function as kind of a quasi researcher into this. And I'm crazy, I'm kooky, and nobody takes me seriously, and I understand that. You know, and that's just TDE. You know, that's why they're out there in fictional short stories and stuff like that. To make these things interesting. Anyway, so we may change QIX into something that fits with this whole thing, you know. We'll just find out. And QIX.me, it is Montenegro. And makes it all very, very, very interesting. You know, for safety's sake, the stuff is kept in Montenegro so that it can, you know, so that something good will happen. The place has been around for a very long time, and it's very big. So it's kind of quasi mystical, but also has kind of a weird dark age background. Anyway, so in our first story, we meet up with this girl. She is in her early 30s. And you have to understand that she has the process done to her. It's a wonder it didn't kill her. First of all, it's a wonder she didn't die. And very much, it was a horrendous thing. First there is this whole surgery of taking this thing out, of taking out somebody's spleen and processing it, and nobody knows how this is done. But apparently, says number one, people can do it without removing their spleen. Their spleen ultimately dies from what they do to try to do this. These guys quicken the pace by actually taking the spleen out and processing whatever they need from that. It's actually a kind of a physical strain. So you actually have to keep taking out your blood, keep separating it into its constituent parts, and putting it back into your body. Now, she didn't do this to herself. This was forced on her as a child. And they chose children because, number one, they're much more pliable. You can get them to do this. They're so much more believing of dangers and things like that, you know. Those children weren't perceived as having much of a will of their own. The only problem is she was just, and it was all about a specific person. And, you know, psychological torture, all kinds of weird stuff done to prepare her for doing this. And the way they instructed her to do this was supposed to pop both bubbles. It was supposed to not only pop that man's bubble, the voice of all this was supposed to pop her. They didn't want to leave her hanging out there. But, of course, all this stuff gets revealed very slowly over a period of time. And at first, it will not be clear if this is just something that some people can do by nature, and the rest of people can't, like it's some weird gene or something. But we go to find out that it is something that you do to yourself that makes this thing possible. And the fact that it's called a bubble is just my description of it. I don't know if they even have a description, because we don't honestly know anything about this. Now, popping somebody's bubble doesn't kill them. It just makes these things stop. And if you're, you know, in this kind of virtual spleen that you have actually drawn out of the body and which forms a bubble around your physical body and into which you can bring other things, you know, when you go out and you reach for something, you can put it into your pocket, you know, you can have clothes, you can do all those things, and those things go with you. Now, like I said, it isn't like old Terminator movie or something like that, you know. It doesn't go with those kinds of, you know, it's a technological thing that makes time travel possible. Yeah. It isn't like that. This is definitely changing yourself so that you can move through time just as readily as you can move through space. No, you could already move through space, therefore it's not a big issue. And that And that life is basically, you know, our relationship to time is basically like a ball rolling down a hill, you know, and you know, there's gravity working on it, you know, there's all kinds of forces. Well, there are forces that just easily work on time, but you know, but what this does to give the person the capability of working against that thing, working against that capability, or working against that nation, you know. You as that ball can stop yourself moving down that hill. You can actually put forth the effort of climbing up that hill, which is moving backwards. You can actually run faster down the hill, which is actually going forward in time, compared with everybody else. I said, you know, but this is only doable within this time period, you know. It really, you know, the whole hill analogy works because it really does. It really does have a beginning. It really does have a, there really is a top to the hill, and you can go all the way up to the top and look around and interact. You know, there's nothing stopping you. Forward in time. And in doing that, of course, you to a large extent lose some physicality to it. And it just becomes this thing that you just learn how to do. Once you have this bubble, now this bubble is always around you, it doesn't matter what state you are, in whatever you're doing, the bubble goes with you. And it isn't very big at all. You can't take large things with you. You can't do stuff like that. So these time travelers tend to find places that are very old. That are, you know, that have some sense of permanence. It's really excellent if you can find some place that has been abandoned for a long, long time. Because, you know, as you sleep, as you do other things, sometimes you will sit some time. Not hugely. But, you know, you may lose a couple of days, you may gain a couple of days compared with other people. Time shift and move same time, you know, it isn't a huge thing. Sometimes it's dangerous to do that, especially if you're moving quickly through time, you know, if you're moving by centuries back in a short period of time. It's kind of dangerous to actually be moving. You have to be really careful, you know. And you know, doing all this stuff, you know, it endows you with this one thing, and there's so many drawbacks to it. There's so many possibilities that it's going to kill you, you know. Well, then something bad will happen. You know, just like bad habits happen, you can go. Like just where I am now, you're going by the side of a hill that's got lots of rocks on the side, and timing may come that one of those rocks falls down and hits you and kills you. You know, that's just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Same thing holds true for time travelers as well. You know, just like we are usually much more concerned about you know, dangers in our proximity in space, because we can get impaled on them. You know, if we're in a car, we can run off the road, or, you know, things can happen like that. There's just the same kind of problem with time, in that something that isn't there right now could all of a sudden become there. So it makes sense that when you're taking large jumps into the past, into the future, that you do this in safe places that won't get you hurt. And that sometimes you kind of have to move. You know, there are certain safe places that you have given what epoch you're traveling through. You know, you might move from the place where you sleep in real time. That's relatively safe. You may choose to move to an old church, practically to any place that helps you, you know, that helps you be safe as you move back. You know, if you're moving quickly forward in a building, there's every chance that building will be rendered, you know, will fall apart on you, fall down on you, and kill you. You know, you want to make sure that you're not in those kinds of places, so you attempt to stick with stone and those kinds of things. You know, is it a very uncomfortable thing to do? Absolutely. Jarring. It's kind of, well, not terribly so, but it's like me here traveling in this car. I'm actually traveling a great distance. And, not particularly great in the grand scheme of things. But there's a shift to it. And the fact that I'm comfortable doing that these days, you know, I've got some built-in stuff. Like I can read while traveling, while a whole lot of other people can't. You know, there's just too much else going on. You start, you know, your eyes may have to adjust to constantly trying to refocus themselves, given the fact that they're actually moving and they actually get the sensation of moving, or, you know, however it is. I really don't know how that actually comes down to working. Nevertheless, it brings us such interesting possibilities. And the whole point is don't go running. Since, number one, this woman that we're talking about, she has no business, you know, she has no interest in sharing any of this stuff with you. The evidence that's going on at all comes from almost the freakish stories of people who have run into her. People who she, at times has had to use. That our first story is about a youth. First story is about she kidnapped a girl. it has to do with something she's trying to accomplish. Now, you have to understand, she isn't necessarily a bad person. And you have to understand, the other thing is that the reason for her being like this never fulfilled itself. You know, she was sent to chase down and stop the traveling. And we probably need to give a term to that. It's different. This guy she was supposed to terminate his travel, when she caught up with him, he'd already died. Something had already happened. And so her traveling was all of a sudden unnecessary. Very difficult to be a time traveler. Very difficult to stay alive as a time traveler. And it wreaks such havoc on you that as you do it, there's, you know, it does strange things to you. And I'm still digging into a little bit. There is actually a term for a medical term for a person who is either missing or has a non-functioning brain, and what is required in the way of treatment for this malady. So I'm still kind of poking around at that to try and figure out exactly what happened. And of course, the mortality rate is rather high, you know. Although, you can't live without a spleen. It is impossible. But you are, you know, you've got problems. And I guess this virtual spleen really doesn't take the place of the spleen. But you only get part of the problem. And once it's all gone, you have all the problems of this problem. So, there's that. Trying to figure out what all this stuff means. Very, very, I find it kind of exciting in an interesting sort of way. Because it's going to be a little snippets here and there. And I think it's a kind of a mystery I can handle because I already know how it's all going to turn out. And I'm already going to, you know, and it isn't that I'm searching so much for answers. I think answers will manifest themselves. Answers will come over time. Of course, we already have to have most of the understanding figured out. We have to have her backstory. and you know, we're gonna start to find some of these weird traits. She is called a witch, and I think it was for lack of any better term to give to her. The sad part is they treat her like a witch, but she's a creative one. You know, the people that probably hate what she does and hate who she has become the most are the people that made her that way. And I know that that is odd on a very deep level, you know, for people to sit here and say, oh my gosh, you know, what? How am I supposed to feel about that? It's terrible. And that somehow this description of her, which seems to be about the only description that really seems to work for most people, it sticks. It sticks with her all this time. And, you know, okay, I'm going to pause this again. I'm going to go to the bathroom out in the middle of the road. I can't believe I've got you. Okay. So we continue on. That was refreshing, if nothing else. So yeah, the whole thing is we slowly start seeing these things happening. The real happening on this first story is that English family, absolutely horrendous family. Goes on a yachting trip, you know. British, well no, not British, English thinks everything of themselves. They've come to the point in their lives where they can go and yacht, and all of the pride and self-centeredness that comes with being able to do such a thing. And they have their children with them, of course. And there's this girl, you know, tweeny type girl, you know, 11, 12-year-old girl. Got her cell phone with her, right? Texting wildly, and of course they end up going to a place where there's no service. And, or very bad service, you know, it's really fringy. And, plenty of places on Shetland where cell service is really fringy, so it's not a big problem to make something like that pretty plausible. And all of a sudden she's gone. And you know, start hunting around for all that northern constabulary, gets involved with it. You know, there's all these people looking around trying to find this person. And you know, there's always time lapse you can do because nobody lives up in this area, and relatively uninhabited Shetland Isles, and then all of a sudden, you know, of course the supposition is on this woman, but and you know who everybody calls the witch, because she's really weird, and nobody likes being around. You know, mostly called witches in her attitude, because she is. But you have to understand, if you have, you know, by the old medical thing, there are certain temperaments tied to certain things, and because you have no spleen, the old thing is that she's very, just kind of mean and evil-tempered and kind of got a bad attitude, stuff like that. It's kind of tied to yellow bile, which she lacks, but she's constantly trying to do the thing that they're supposed to build up yellow bile in the body. Now that's not going to come out, except that we're going to see some of her paraphernalia of doing it. Of trying to increase her yellow bile so she can have at least a decent life. And, you know, you can't ever really overcome the acid absence. I mean, back in the old days, they would treat you to try to rebalance things, but that supposed you had some in the first place. So this whole missing of yellow bile is you know, part of that whole thing of, well, she really likes this and this and this, and these things are all supposed to have lots of, but because it's not now, it's not present, it doesn't make any sense to anybody. So this first short story is almost kind of just weird. And then it starts building after that, what it would be. And of course, this 11-year-old girl comes back with this absolutely silly story. And of course, the first people that don't believe her are her parents, because her parents are, you know, I'm English and I have a rational sort. This can't be. Oh, you're just telling stories. And I come back and say, it would be easy to shock this child's weird fantasy and trying to drum up a little excitement on a very boring, pointless trip where she's really not very happy about it at all. And ultimately, well, you know, when it ultimately comes down to it, all of a sudden the witch and the girl come out of the bushes, and she's like, well, this person, poor girl, had a horrible trauma, you know. And of course, you know, it's a very weird person, doesn't speak like everybody else, doesn't have an accent anybody can really recognize. She talks weird, she uses strange words that are practically antique, but most people don't recognize that. After they searched her house, researched all these things and found all this weird stuff. Because this is really the first time anything's ever happened. You've made people actually search your place. You know, they don't get to search your place if you're not a suspicious, you know, a suspect of some sort. So that's kind of where all this stuff comes from. Anyway, so the first story is really kind of what a strange woman, and what a strange story that this girl has to tell, and that really it is my narrative to say I would dismiss this except for the fact that there have been other strange happening around this woman that I stumbled onto, and that it's just not her being strange. There are weird things going on. Stuff that should happening, but yet are happening, and so we have to pile that together. I need to start coming up with a little few more stories, but it needs to be something where she leaves a little evidence behind her. And that you can see it. She's not trying to leave evidence behind, but honestly, she is a very strange person. It's not like being able to time travel all of a sudden gives you this magnificent ability to cover your tracks very well. Of course, when you're putting down tracks all over creation in time, you know, it is it's a horrible thing, and. Have to kind of trace your steps. The fact that there's no birth record of her at all, you know, that she went to a doctor and somebody saw her, you know, horrible scar on her abdomen. Right? Where the medieval, don't call them surgeons, these medieval butchers, there you go, barbers, for maybe lack of a better term, took out her spleen. How it was done, and that these things are slowly start being revealed, and there's not a lot that we can really do about it except to say. Yeah, we're probably going to have the story of this strange thing that happened with this doctor. Okay. be really obvious that this time traveling group is very small. There were very few people at all who knew about this going on, there's really only the one study of one doctor who was playing around with yellow bile and discovered something you can do with it. And that time travel was happening. So who knows how on earth they figured all this out, but somebody did. And I don't think it's problematic to have God be involved in it. To have God kind of pulling the string. Although this is certainly a damaged woman to have to cope with. Oh, the magisterium is evil, and you go, you know what? Not particularly. Although it was trying to destroy something that it found to be unnatural. Horribly unnatural. And it was trying to stop it from happening. Which didn't turn out to be terribly hard. It was probably one of the first big conflicts between science and religion. The first big time when they went up against each other. Of course, religion won, Nowadays, it's just the opposite. Religion is presently on the ropes, and science always wins, Although it starts turning that same corner, the fact that it is easier to hide the unexplained. Say it doesn't happen. If you have evidence of it, destroy that evidence. It's always much easier to do that than it is people often say, oh yeah, the church is always trying to bury stuff, and it's always trying to kill off what it doesn't understand. You know what? Science does the same thing by its own action. Trust me. People die for the cause of not screwing with science. or with what science wants to put forth right now. You know, as far as tactics and methods and stuff like that, science is just as just as culpable and ignorant and searching to root out heresy as any religion is. In fact, I think science most fits into being just the new dominant religion, you know. But anyway, you know, to say the tactics don't change, the people don't change, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have. And what are we going to do? And this woman eventually catches up with the original doctor. When he realized that the magisterium wanted to kill him as a heretic, he made himself a time traveler, and he traveled to escape them. And you run into each other. The really interesting thing is that this bubble really is a physical thing. And it's really strange because people who haven't done this themselves don't really have a bubble. I mean, they have a sense of a personal space, but you can't measure, you know? It isn't out there. Kind of almost a question of contact or getting close to somebody that can't have almost put kind of a sexual skin on you. But when you're traveling, things that you have with you, they come with you. You know, if you're wrapped in a blanket, well, it really has to be skin contact. You know, some second skin on that level. So it really has to be something in contact with you. Things come with you that are touching you. So that's how by just going through the problem of grabbing somebody's hand and taking the child and doing it to her, you know, really puts her through, you know, she blacks out. inside, and I saw this person. She was grumpy and crabby, and she grabbed me. And all of a sudden I blacked out. And when I woke up, I was someplace else. So on her first experience, she wasn't coherent of things. She just all of a sudden found herself in this really weird circumstance, taking care of this really weird situation. So when they come back, the girl is just simply really disoriented and really quite sick, holding this woman's hand as she, you know, pulled her from one time, and actually walking too, from this one time into this one other space, and you know, and so they come in crashing in through you know, a picket, really. I hope we got crashing through picket machines. It could cause problems temporarily. All of a sudden, they appear from someplace else. There's this poor girl, and she's ill and having problems, but she's disoriented, and thinking the crappy old woman goes back to her house and locks the door and doesn't want to be dealt with. And everybody says, well, she's back, you know, no harm done, everything's okay. Except that heard this interesting story. So, and I don't know exactly what this is going to be trying to accomplish, except that I think for this first story, the witch is trying to break into this vault where information about what's happening to her is kept. And she's trying to figure out what's going on. You know, toward what end, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure where she goes. Somebody looking at me for a possible contract job. Huh. I'm not yet, you know, I'm in the midst of taking opportunities and looking at opportunities and seeing what's out there. So, you know, one never should really stop doing that particularly. Anyway, so yeah, so you know, and that's really the first story leading on to many others, where we start to kind of collect things about this person, you know, and the whole point of the story is to, number one, be intrigued, and number two, leave 100 strings attached. To where people go, why did she need to do that? Why was, you know, why did she need to get in there? She went in there and she gets some documents. And then that's all. And she really doesn't talk about it anymore. Except this girl sneaks, of course, sneaks a piece. You know, we have to be able to do them. And it's, you know, and she's going, these are such, they're antique documents. And she tries desperately to describe the fact that these are parchment. That these are records written, it's written. And she can technically read it, but, you know, it doesn't make much sense to me. So, you know, and it's just made to kind of suck you in, as it be as an ebook and put up on Amazon, Kindle store, you know, it makes it so that people really want to see where this is going. And have some fun with it. It's going to be based around Shetland because this is her, at first it's just where she is, then we start learning that it's her, hiding place. And then we learn that she has, you know, perhaps that she is far from home. You know, there's no sense in ranging out too much if you don't need to. And it's really quite... quite excellent, and whoa, regard. So it's kind of it's supposed to be something that draws you in, and I guess in that way, looking at it, it's somewhat of a mystery. Because you're trying to figure something out, and we can be led in all kinds of directions to say, she's evil, and you go, well, she's evil, why did she just kill the girl? Why did she bother bringing her back? Well, she's obviously just kind of a grouchy old, you know, she's called a witch for a purpose, you know. Be very clear about how it worked. Just go, you know what? It was something that was never written down. All that was really known is that it was happening. And that in its happening, it had to be destroyed. And that's what the Magisterium was up to. Was things like this. And that they felt like that it was such a pernicious and horrible evil that everything around it had to be destroyed. You know. And that we will likely actually develop a relationship directly with her, and that we will actually travel with her, you know, as carriers. You know, you could do this too if you wanted to, but my advice is don't. I will take you to places, and you will see. Surrounded by interesting people. There will be people who in various times try to use her to do things. And that also is going to come up as well. And that kind of produces a weird issue. People cannot easily move between times. There's lots of things. It's almost a question of immunity, you know. When you take someone from one time and you stick them in another time, or you expose them to some other location or some other time, you know, a superbug from the future can destroy somebody from the past. Maybe, you know, it may be. You know, when people say, hey, how come the Black Plague happened? And you go, do you really want to know how the Black Plague happened? It was caused by one of the veterans. They had taken something back with them as they were going. And that's where that kind of second skin comes from. You know, the fact that the essence of their spleen is all around them. It's not internalized, it's externalized. It serves them as kind of a shield. And that time itself is kind of akin to a disease. The fact that you are stuck in a certain course, and that you can't stop it, you can't move around in it, this thing almost makes it so that you can't. And somehow the spleen keeps you where you are. Well, it's not really the spleen so much as this yellow bile. So, and that this second skin that you almost get by using this, by having this procedure done to you, the one nice thing it does is actually protects you against these kinds of things. You know, if it can't get inside your body and can't germinate, for lack of a better term, it can't get you. So there is some special things. There's going to be some sickness come from this or that. Usually it has to do, you know, things from the future can really screw up the past, pathogens. stuff like that. I don't know if it's, you know. And what's weird is knowledge isn't really that big of a problem. We fall into the trap that we think that since we're from the future, we're sophisticated. And you're going, actually, we're not. In fact, we are more childish. We are more, you know, we are simply more button pressers. You know, that seems to be almost all we can really tangibly do. Where people from the past are actually far more capable. And given any circumstance, they will tend to be able to take care of themselves, to adjust the circumstances so much quicker than we can. So I say, oh, well, you can't use a cell phone, can you? And you go, well, let me see it. And you go, almost immediately, they start being able to use it. And you go, well, that took you so much time, and you're doing it so easily. And you go, it's not that hard, Jerry. You know, it's like, oh, fine. Hey, whatever. So, alright, we're coming into town. We probably need to stop, so this is a good place to stop. I really like where this is going because it needs to fit in good, but it also needs to be a brain twister for just how come she's so much better at this than we are. So you have to understand, our world is intractably simple, and we've worked really, really hard over the matter of decades, maybe even centuries, to simplify life. And therefore, you know, people say, oh, well, they'll think everything around them is magic. And you go, no, they won't. They won't. And the interesting thing is we've made things so simple in our world that it's child's play to them, things that we seem to say, oh, well, boy, we need to bring a specialist for that. And you go, no, you don't. I can figure that out. That's easy. You have to know these kind of things all the time. You know, if you don't know these kind of things in my world, you'll die. It's not that for simplicity. Anyway, okay, so there's that. And so I'm going to stop now. Have a great day.